Good morning, everyone. Emily's voice is a little under the weather, so I'm going to stand in for her. My name is Pam Brunet. I work at Leadership Greater Syracuse, and I'm introducing our speaker this morning. I want to welcome you all to Thursday Morning Roundtable. I would like to begin, as SU always does at all of its events, by acknowledging with respect to the Onondaga Nation, the Fire Keepers and the Haudenosaunee and the Indigenous people of whose ancestral lands SU now stands. So thank you for allowing me to introduce Dustin. Emily, I appreciate the opportunity to be here. For those of you who aren't familiar with Dustin, for 6 years he has served as the Onondaga, he has served Onondaga County by being the Democratic Elections Commissioner. So if you don't know, I'm here to share with you that there are 62 boards of elections in New York State, which have board commissioners and other board staff who are selected equally from the two major parties, Republicans and Democrats. And Dustin and his colleagues are responsible for the process of, ready for this, registering voters, certification of candidates for the ballot, maintenance and setup of the voting machines, appointment and training of approximately 1,500 election inspectors and voting machine custodians, and canvassing and certifying that all elections are legitimate. So Dustin personally oversees 14 election professionals. So I'm here to tell you that this is a huge undertaking because I'm one of those 1,500 people that sits at the polls. And it's harder than you think it is, I promise you that. But it's very rewarding. So if you're interested in doing it, I'm happy to talk with you about it, as well as Dustin is. So when I was at Leadership Greater Syracuse a couple weeks ago, we had a speaker, Renee Downey Hart from Le Moyne College, come in and talk about how everybody has a gift, and everybody, she even said everybody has a superpower, and everybody brings something different, and it's our job as leaders to recognize each other for each other's gifts and superpowers. So I've known Dustin for 6 years, and I think I figured out your superpower. Yeah, maybe your son will appreciate this. Okay, so I call it the helper gene. Dustin, I believe, has the helper gene, because my observation of him is that he is a man who has very high integrity, he has exceptional knowledge on his responsibilities, and he's always willing to help. He's willing to teach and guide anyone from any party, and he certainly teaches everybody how to navigate the political process. So, it's because of his superpower that he's here today. So please join me in welcoming Dustin Czarny, who will share what he knows about the recently passed electoral reforms in New York State.
Thank you, Pam. And thank you, all of you, for coming today. I'm always grateful to be recognized as a superhero. So thank you for that as well. Pam said, I am the Democratic Elections Commissioner here in Onondaga County, but I'm also the caucus chair for the Democratic Caucus of New York State Elections Commissioners Association. So I've worked with all of my colleagues throughout all 62 counties in New York State, and our caucus has been at the forefront of pushing for many of these election reforms, well, for really the better part of a decade or so. Finally, we're starting to see the fruits of our labors come to pass, and these election reforms that are being passed this year are exciting and daunting, because now we have to implement them. But after years and years of seeing just a glacial pace of electoral reform in New York and watching us get further and further and further behind the national trend, we finally are starting to see that we are not only catching up, but we have the potential to surpass some states in many areas. And this all changed this last November when the makeup of the legislature changed. And a lot of these reforms were broadly approved by the public, but were never brought to even a vote in the New York State Senate. And what we saw that when they were brought to a vote this last January, not only was there enough support to pass, but there was bipartisan support for many of these reforms as well. And so it's really exciting to see these changes be enacted. So what happened in New York? Well, here's the new election laws that were passed this year. This was the signing ceremony for all of these laws that were passed on the first day of session. You see Governor Cuomo there, and Senate Election Chair Zellner Myrie and Assembly Election Chair Charles Levine and Ben Stiller, because why not? Ben Stiller. He was at the signing ceremony as well. Well, the New York State Senate and the Assembly passed early voting. This was all passed on the first day fourth day of session, but the first working day of the legislature this year. Early voting, consolidating our primary, no longer having two different primaries, but consolidating and moving the September primary to June. Universal transfers, this is where people no longer have to re-register to vote every time they move across a county line. Pre-registration of 16 and 17 year olds. So now this doesn't change the voting age range, but it does allow young people to register to vote, and then when they turn 18, they can vote. And it started the constitutional process for a couple of more changes. No excuse absentee voting and same day registration. So all of these things were passed in the first working day of the new legislature. And most of them were passed, the first three things were passed to be effective this year. So we're implementing them now, which is very exciting. But it's also, you know, a little scary as well. So the first thing and the biggest thing was early voting. This is something that election reform advocates and commissioners were pushing for many, many years. And 38 other states already do this, and the District of Columbia. So we have the benefit of learning from what they're implementing. So while getting it done now seems daunting to us, we have a lot of states to teach us of what the best practices are. So we're not reinventing the wheel. Early voting will start in November of 2019. This year we'll have a primary in June, and I'll go over that in a little bit, but there will be no early voting in the June primary. It starts in November of 2019. So that's the little bit of break that the legislature gave me, you know, I don't have to implement it right away, but there's a lot of moving pieces, so we're thankful for that. There will be 9 days of early voting, starting on the 10th day before the election, so two full weekends. It starts on the two Saturdays before the election, runs for 9 days, and then stops on the Sunday before the election. So on that Monday, we can get all the history in and get ready for general election day. All right, there's one site for every 50,000 voters. That's what the law mandates. So if a county has less than 50,000 voters, or there's a gray area if you have over 50,000 but less than 100,000, you can have only one site. So some of the smaller counties don't have to have as many sites. Onondaga County has about 290,000 voters right now and growing every day. So we're going to end up doing six sites throughout Onondaga County. You have to have those sites open for a minimum of 5 hours on the weekends and 8 hours on the weeknights, and two nights on the weeknights have to be open till 8 p.m. So early voting sites can be open anytime from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m., but we are mandated during the early voting period to have at least 2 days that they're open till 8 p.m. And they can be regional or vote centers. And what do I mean by that? Well, you can set up your six sites to say, okay, these four towns go to this site, these four towns go to this site, the city of Syracuse goes to this site, that kind of stuff. Or you can have what's called vote centers, and that's the goal. Whereas all six sites in Onondaga County, any voter in Onondaga County, no matter where they live, can go to any one of these sites and vote. And that is the goal in Onondaga County, and I believe we'll be able to achieve that goal, and I'll teach you how. Yes?
Doesn't it say it open until 9 p.m.?
I think it does say 9. It should say 8. That's a typo on my part. So general elections open to 9 p.m., but the early voting is 8 p.m. So that's when the early voting sites are open to. I knew I'd get one wrong, so hopefully I got it out of the way early on. So the goal is to be open where anybody, anywheres in the county can show up. Let's say they live in Camillus, but they're working downtown. Well, they can drive to Destiny USA on their way home and maybe vote, you know, or they're shopping at Destiny or another mall, or they're driving by the DeWitt Town Hall and they decide, you know what, I have a couple hours, I want to go out and I want to get this done. No matter where they live, they should be able to do that. That's going to take an upgrade in technology, and I'll go over that in a little bit. But I think it is the goal, and I think we're going to be able to do that here in Onondaga County. Other counties may decide to go regional until they're able to do it like that. But I think most counties are going to try to do on-demand ballot printing and electronic poll books so they can do these vote centers. So here's here's Onondaga County. And here are before I put this up there, this is approximate locations we want to put early voting sites. We haven't chosen the early voting sites yet. In fact, we have to choose six sites by May 1st. And the commissioners have to choose. My Republican colleague, Michelle Sardo, and myself have to agree on where all these six sites are and what their hours are. We are scheduled to visit about 15 different poll sites that we're asking them to consider allowing us to be early voting sites at. So the goal is to get them equal distance around Onondaga County. So we look at one somewhere up in the northern suburbs, one over there in the western suburbs, one in the northern part of Syracuse, maybe Destiny USA, that's something that we're talking to them about. One over in the eastern suburbs, again, maybe DeWitt Town Hall, because it's right near DeWitt and Manlius. And one in the inner city to serve an underserved community. We're looking at Southwest Community Center, maybe downtown Syracuse. Those are the areas that we're looking at there. And one somewhere around the southern tier. This one is the one that we're really still kind of trying to figure out, because we have a unique problem in Onondaga County. Our population is all up here. It's all in the northern towns and in the city of Syracuse. You get down around here, and I'm a graduate of Skinny Atlas, so no offense to any of the southern towns, but there's no people as compared to the upper Clay has 30,000 people in it, and there's less than, I think, in the southern tier towns, there's less than about 15,000 people altogether. So, but we also don't want people to have to drive a long way to their early voting. So this southern tier town, this southern one is going to be an interesting one for us to try to figure out where to put it, because the most people in this southern region is in Onondaga, but that's also pretty close to the Camillus one that we want to do. So, these are the kind of things that we have to decide as we're going forward. What is not just best for the populace of every little town, but what's equal distance? And now, if we are able to do vote centers where we're not telling certain towns to go to one center, then spreading them out more makes more sense. But if it's like regional, where we're trying to say these towns go here, these towns go there, then we're going to probably want to put those early voting sites inside population centers, inside villages, inside the cities, where the people are the most, so they have less distance to travel. But if we're saying you can drive by and vote, then spreading them out a little bit more will help as well. All right, so that's early voting, big change, maybe the most radical change, maybe the most thing that's a change for those of us who run for office and run campaigns is the unified primary and the calendar changes that go along with it. Now, what they did was they moved the state and local primary from September to June. This is a good thing. I think this is a great thing for the voters, not so much for the candidates that have to go out and walk petitions now. But it's great for the voters because it allows the voters to take a break after a primary, reassess, decide who their general election preferences are, and it also allows the boards of elections a little bit of time and space to get ready for the general election. Having a primary in the beginning of September and then trying to reset everything for the beginning of November became very problematic, especially when there were court cases and a lot of judicial nominating conventions that all happened after the primary, that last year we didn't have a ballot ready until 21 days before the general election. And usually we have it about 40 days before the general election. We can start sending out absentees. And we had people knocking on our door for those absentees. So having this space is good. And it also allows us to catch up on registration. Last year, the Onondaga County Board of Elections, we processed 61,000 registration forms. That's more than any year in the last 10 years, even presidential years. And most of those forms came in after the cutoff for the September primary, which meant that we couldn't process them while the primary is going on. And we were working 12-hour days to get done with this for the general election. So having this space after the primary is very good for the boards of elections. New York was the only state in the union to have two separate primaries. No more. and it was very costly. What happened with that was is that our traditional September primary, and by the way, those of you may remember that the New York primary wasn't always in September. It used to be in June, but it was changed to September mainly because the state legislature didn't want the primary happening when they were in session. And that was one of the reasons that the many senators used over the last 6 years not to move it back, is they didn't want to mess with their session. Well, that's nice. I would like to, but the county legislators and all of them, they're always in session. So when elections are happening, back in, I believe it was 2010, New York was found in violation of the Federal MOVE Act, the Military and Overseas Voter Act. That September primary was too late in the calendar to guarantee that we were sending out absentee ballots and military ballots to overseas personnel and military personnel. And because of that, we were ordered to either move our primary or do two primaries, and we chose to do neither. And so then the federal government took us to court. And we asked for a deferment and got it, waited a couple years, then asked for another deferment, and they finally said, no more. We're going to go to court and decide this. And Judge Gary Sharp in 2012 finally ruled that, he took testimony from all sides, and all sides kind of agreed that whatever Judge Gary Sharp rules, we're going to move our primary to, because we don't want to have two primaries. Well, Judge Gary Sharp ruled that the end of June is the best time to have a primary, and the people who wanted August, well, they decided they weren't going to come to the table and agree, and so we ended up having two primaries. And so for 6 years, every even year, we had two primaries, and it cost New York State taxpayers over $25 million every 2 years to hold these two primaries. And not only did it cost us all this money to have this separate primary, but it also confused voters. They didn't know, those of you who worked elections and had a congressional primary and a local primary, people felt like, well, didn't I already go vote in the primary? Haven't we already decided this? Which candidates are we deciding on this time? And all of these different elections confused the voters. So moving, what the state legislature did was they finally said, you know what, we are going to have the one primary. We're going to put it in June. That makes the most sense because people aren't on vacation at the end of June as much as they are in August or July. Another thing that people weren't understanding about August and July is a lot of our polling places, we have 179 polling places in Onondaga County, not all of them have great air conditioning. Some of our inspectors tend to be on the older side. And could you imagine having them in a heat wave in August inside of a polling place for 10 hours? So these were concerns that were why those of us who wanted June primary, and by the way, there was a bipartisan agreement amongst elections commissioners for the June primary as well. The only ones who wanted the August primary were the old Senate majority. They wanted the August primary. So Once that changed, then we got the June primary. And again, once it got voted on, it got passed with bipartisan support. So just allowing the vote was important there. But this creates a sea change for our New York State political calendar. Those of you who go out and work on campaigns, a lot of things are changing. The first thing is petition times have changed. How we get candidates on the ballot in New York is we go around walking to petitions door to door, asking people to sign. You got to get 5% of the registered voters within a subdivision to be able to get on the ballot. The earlier petition time is now, instead of walking from June to the middle of July, we're walking starting Tuesday, this last Tuesday, February 26th, until the beginning of April. So April 1st is when petitions start getting turned in. And that's my April Fool's joke, is for all the people who say they're out there walking petitions, that's when you find out maybe they were lying to you. But April 1st is when petitions get turned in. So it is a little bit of a change, but it's not that much of a change because, we talked about these separate primaries that we had in New York. The congressional primaries already were happening in June, so the parties were already out there walking petitions in this earlier time period. Now they're just having more sheets. So it's a little bit of a change. There's all this beautiful white stuff outside that's, we're Syracuse, we can handle this. We've done this before, but more importantly, candidates have to choose that they're running for office quicker. So instead of having more time after an election to decide whether you're going to declare for office and start getting committee support, really the calendar doesn't stop. The next election starts the day after the last election, conceivably, for many candidates, and maybe even before. And it frees up space between the primary and the general for the boards of elections and also for candidates as well. You're involved in a primary, you're spending a lot of money, you get all your volunteers out, you win the primary. Back when the primary was in September, well, you didn't have any break. You had to get right back into the general election, had to get right back on the phone getting that money to be able to finance the general election. And a lot of times that was used as a reason not to primary, tell people not to primary, because of this late primary election, you don't have enough time between the primary and general. Now, there could be more choices. There could be more primaries because you have more of a time in between. Some people may not like that, but I, as somebody who likes activity and somebody who likes access, I think that's a good thing for the public, and I think that's a good thing for people who are deciding to run for office. All right, and it all gives the Board of Elections more time to register voters. As I said last year, so many registrations came in, a record number of registrations came in, but they came in so late that we had to have a downtime where you can't register voters during an election because they can't be in our system. And so we got backed up and we were working 12-hour days just to get ready for the November election. Now that primary happens in June and we have time to keep up with the registrations and also to any late surges, we're not also dealing with an election that's happening as well. And we can get these processed and the voters can know where they have to go vote. Another thing that didn't get a lot of press is this universal transfers for registration. But in our modern mobile society, it's very important. It's implemented now. It's going to start, in the next 2 weeks. I think it starts sometime in March. It gave us 60 days from the time it was passed to start it. And what it does is it recognizes a statewide system for registration. Up until now, the county boards were responsible for every county voter, and we still are. But there was a thing called NYS Voter, NYS Voter, which was a statewide registration system. And we've been keeping that up for 15 years, but it wasn't the official registration system, even though it was exactly like what was in the county boards. And by now recognizing that as the official registration system, it allows people, it eliminates the need to re-register anytime you cross, county lines, I'm sorry. Second mistake. All right, eliminates the need to register when crossing county lines. So if you're moving from, let's say you live out in Brewerton, And you may move, you know, a couple blocks down the street, and all of a sudden you're in Oswego County. You know, you would have to go to the Oswego County Board of Elections to re-register. Now, your registration is portable. Your voter history is portable. Your party choice is portable. And it goes to, you can update it through the New York State Board of Elections or at the DMV, and all of that stuff is automatically transferred. It will also, you know, it becomes portable, including your history and address changes, so everything gets moved along. And it also will allow for affidavit ballots. As you know, if you move inside a county now and you're not able to update your registration before the election, you can show up at your new polling place and vote by affidavit ballot, and it automatically updates your registration. Now, and we're still waiting for all the official rules and regs to come from the state, now it should be able to do that across county lines as well. If you had crossed county lines and tried to do that, and you were registered in a former county, you would have to get a court order, which is a long time on election day to try to stand in line, wait for a judge, and maybe the judge will agree and maybe they won't. Now it should become a lot easier for those people to vote. And this really comes into play in the suburbs of New York City as well, too. You know, you always have people moving in and out of the city. It comes into play any of the border towns in any county. We have a very portable society. We have people that are moving from apartment to apartment and sometimes going across county lines. And the old days of saying, well, the county is, you know, keeps the only record and that's the official record, really doesn't work anymore. So this, while it didn't get a lot of play in the press, is a very important change for how we do elections. And of course, pre-registration of 16 and 17 year olds. We got our little pre-registration candy bar because it's kind of a treat. This one is not going to start until 2020, but New York will join 18 other states to allow it. It allows boards of elections to accept registrations from citizens who are at least 16 years of age. And why is this important? Well, what else happens at 16 years of age? People get their driver's license, right? Well, you can register to vote at the DMV, but up until now, those registrations were not accepted by the boards of elections because you had to be turning 18 in the year that a registration came to the board. Or if I was visiting high schools, and I do that quite a lot, and if somebody who was a senior, but like a younger senior who wasn't going to turn 18 until January, I wouldn't be allowed to register them to vote because they didn't turn 18 until the next calendar year. Now it says if they are 16 or 17 and a citizen, they can register to vote. Now, it doesn't change their voting age range. They can't vote until they're 18. What it does is we will put them in an inactive status, and then once their 18th birthday comes, we will make them register to vote. And pairing that with the DMV is very important. Everybody gets their learner's permit, and what it does is it eliminates that first barrier for young persons to register, because that is the biggest barrier. Once somebody gets registered, they will participate in the system a lot more. It's the ones that are not registered. And right now, the last study that in New York State showed that only 60% of those who are eligible to register to vote in New York State, 18 years, citizens and older, are actually registered and properly registered. This will go to combat that. And it will also combat the youth voting scourge, really, that's out there. Because even though that they've been voting more over the last few cycles, they're still way behind any other age grade when it comes to voting. This is a big deal for them. And the states that enacted it saw youth participation in their electorate go up. So we're really excited about that. But this will not start until 2020. So we have a little time. So if you have a 16-year-old getting their license this year, they got to wait. But next year, we can get them. And a couple of constitutional amendments were passed as well early. No-fault absentees and same-day registration. These require constitutional amendments to the New York State Constitution. So this is going to take some time before these are effective. But I think these are really, you know, when paired with other reforms, these are really great reforms that are going to impact New York State. So how long will it take? We may not see these until 2022, because the New York State constitutional amendment process is, it needs to be passed by one legislature, and then passed again by a newly elected legislature. So the earliest that could happen is 2021. Then it's passed by the voters. So the earliest that could happen is fall of 2021. And then the enabling legislation has to be passed again by the legislature, because the constitutional change allows it, but then they have to pass another law actually changing it. So 2022 at the earliest is where we'll see these two changes. And unfortunately, a lot of people already believe we already have no-fault absentee, but we don't. Same-day registration will basically expand our affidavit voting process at the polls. So somebody goes in to vote right now, they're not in the poll books. We have them do an affidavit ballot, and about half of them turn out to not be registered at all properly to vote. Well, if we get those affidavit ballots back and we able to determine that they are a citizen and they are 18, they just didn't bother registering to vote, we'll be able to count that vote in the post-election process. That's what same-day registration is. So a lot of the fear about fraud here is really not based on any practice of same-day registration that is practiced in the other 11 states that do this, plus, of course, the District of Columbia. Because what happens is we are actually verifying these before we actually count those votes. So it's not like, you know, there's a flood of votes that come in that determine elections and then you can't determine it. They're verified afterwards, but it just allows them, and by the way, gets them registered to vote afterwards as well. So that is the theory about same-day registration and how it will be enacted in New York. No-fault absentee right now, if you want an absentee vote, you're supposed to be either sick and infirmed and unable to go to the polls, or you're out of the county that day. Now, early voting will help with some of that as well. But I used to joke that people come to the boards of elections, and we knew, on the form, all you had to do was say you're going to be out of the county, and people come to the board of elections, see early voting happening in other states, assuming it's happening in New York State, come to our counter and say, I'd like to early vote. And we'd say, well, you can't early vote. You have to get an absentee, but that means that you're going to be out of town on election day. They're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be out of town on election day and fill out the absentees. So this will remove that reason for, and really, why have a reason? If somebody wants to vote by mail, if somebody wants to vote, they're done, they've made their choices. Why should they have to say that they're sick or infirm or going to be out of the county? And by the way, it also removes that ridiculous, because it says that if you're saying you're out of the county, but you're in the county on election day, you're supposed to go to the polls and vote, and then we have to pull your absentee ballot before it counts. And that's an onerous process for the boards of elections as well. 30 states and D.C. already do this. So the majority of the country already have no-fault absentee. And what it could turn into is vote by mail, which we see in Colorado, Oregon, and those states have seen dramatic increases in turnout because of that. And they mail ballots to every voter, and the voters mail them back. But what they have done, and they changed the way they do this, they don't count. We count absentee ballots after election day, like sometimes 14 days after election day. Well, in the states that have early voting and mail-in ballots and no-fault absentees, you can see up to 30% of your ballots be turned in by mail. Well, we can't wait until after election day if that is, because otherwise we'd never have a winner on election day. We'll probably have to change the way we count absentees. We'll have to count them as they come in, like most other states do, by the way. As they come in, they're processed, they're counted. The bipartisan teams make sure that they're right, and then they're scanned in, and then the votes are not tabulated till election day, so nobody knows who won those absentees, but we know that they're in and they're counted. So, and that would, And that would eliminate some of the people. I know some people say, oh, I don't want to vote by absentee because then my vote doesn't count unless the race is close. Well, that's not true. We count every absentee, every race, every year, no matter what. But if they realize that it's being counted before Election Day, then they're more likely to put that in then, because they'll see, it seems like it's just something that happens after the fact. Whereas if they're part of that Election Day total, I think you'd see more people using the absentee process. So we have to, all these changes mean that we have to have some technology changes to change the way we process voters and be able to enact these changes and reach their full potential. So the first one is my favorite one, electronic poll books. Besides early voting, electronic poll books has been my little baby since I've become a commissioner. In 2014, Onondaga County piloted an electronic poll book. And in 2015, I was presenting to our statewide commissioner association about them. And in 2016, our statewide commissioner association finally, also with a bipartisan agreement, recommended them, and we didn't get them passed. Well, they're still not passed. But last night, the Senate passed electronic poll books, and the Assembly has passed it every year for the last 3 years, so we know that that's probably going to pass in the next week. So electronic poll books are coming to New York. They're going to take the place of those paper poll books at the polls. Now, that's going to be a change for our workers. And by the way, important to note that this is, you do not have to do it. They're not making us do it. It's permissive. But to do early voting the way we have it, you almost have to do it this way. You have to get electronic poll book. Ballot on demand. This is where somebody can go into a vote center. Remember, I talked about the vote centers on early voting and show up. Well, you're going to have a printer there that prints up their ballot, because everybody has a different ballot style, and you're not going to keep reams and reams and reams of ballots in every poll site and have to track that every night. You're going to have a printer that prints the ballot designed to that person. We had a demonstration yesterday of an electronic poll book company that's pairing with Dominion Voting, which does our voting machines now, and the stuff that's out there in other states is amazing. People check in an electronic poll book, get a slip, go to a printer, put the slip under a scanner, and it prints up their ballot. They take that ballot, fill it out, put it in another scanner, and that's what counts it. So you still have your paper backup. You still have the voter doing the marking and not a machine, so you don't have any problem with hacking, and you still get your retention of your paper, and it's seamless. And, these electronic poll books are like tablets. They're very intuitive and foolproof, although we'll put that to its test. But so you need these things to do the vote centers. But and yes, that's for early voting, because we can't say you can go to anywhere in Onondaga County without these two things, without for early voting. But eventually, not yet. I don't want to scare you, but eventually, I think this is how we're going to do voting on Election Day as well. Because we have 179 polling sites in Onondaga County. Each one's staffed with inspectors. That's a huge cost to Onondaga County. And the reason we have so many is because we have to have certain neighborhoods go to certain poll sites. Well, if we allowed on Election Day anybody to show up at any poll site and have their ballot printed there and vote, we can reduce the number of poll sites greatly and have bigger poll sites, but still be in neighborhoods, for walkable neighborhoods in urban settings. But we would no longer have this need to have so many poll sites. We would actually save money if we went to that. Now, that's many years down the line. We're going to probably need to get early voting off its feet. We're going to need to get absentee, no-fault absentees off its feet, maybe mail-in, same-day registrations. Once those things happen, I can see us then start having the conversation about moving our Election Day processes to vote centers as well. So, you know, early voting is something I've been pursuing for 15 years. And my wife has said, well, what are you going to talk about at parties, every party now that it's passed? And I said, well, I got another windmill to tip at. This will be my new windmill to tip at. So this will be the thing that I want to talk about, because I think that, and it's not that crazy. Again, other states do it. Other states have these vote centers where you can go to anywheres on election day and vote. And it works really well. So what's next? Because that's all of that is great, and that all happened this year or is about to happen this year. But there are some other things that may happen later in the year or on the horizon in future legislatures, because there's a lot of things happening in other states that we're still not doing or not addressing. First one is automatic voter registration. This is something that has taken the country really by storm. 16 other states already do it, and that's in the last 2 years they've started doing it. Oregon started it, and now many other states have jumped on it, and there are bills in the New York State Legislature that may get passed this year about automatic voter registration. And what does that do? What is it? Well, instead of what we have now, which is an opt-in system where you have to go and register to vote, if you interact with a New York State social agency or the DMV, you will have an opt-out system. So you will have to say, no, I don't want to register to vote, instead of, yes, I do. And while that doesn't seem like a big deal, it is. That first barrier, as I talked about, is the registration barrier, is the biggest barrier to participation in our electoral system. So if we move to that, the states that have moved to that, Oregon, Colorado, again, these progressive, and I say that in the non-political term, but progressive in electoral term states that are putting these things out there, they're seeing their voter turnout rates dramatically increase. So that is something that I really hope that we see soon. Online registration, expanding it to the boards of elections. Well, right now, you can register to vote if you have a DMV account, if you have the My DMV account, because you already have processed paperwork at the DMV, and we can get your signature captured, because that's how we verify you in New York State, then we can do that. Now that we're going to electronic poll books, now that we have ability to capture signatures at polling sites, which we already do now, but it'll be easier, we could conceivably move our online voter registration to the boards of elections websites, have people fill out HTML files, and then have to show ID on election day or some form of ID on election day. We don't have voter photo ID in New York, but we do have ID processes in New York for new voters, and sign the book, and then we would be able to capture their signature the first time that they register to vote. So that barrier that has been out there before that would keep a more aggressive online voter registration system from being in place is now gone. Allow for online absentee ballot applications at the Board of Elections websites to eliminate the need to mail an application. This is another thing that, again, kind of goes to before websites were created, that's when the law was created, but there's no real need for somebody to have to mail in an application, and then we get it. And then we mail them a ballot when it's ready. And then they mail the ballot back. That's the absentee ballot process now. If we can eliminate that first step, again, they can come to our Board of Elections website. They fill out an HTML form saying, yes, I want an absentee ballot application. Again, it's mailed to their house. It's mailed to where they live. We would have to have some, we can verify their signature when the signature comes back on the ballot. These are things that have to be studied, and we have to have processes in place to combat fraud. And the NC09, North Carolina 9th Congressional District, the stuff that happened down there is very scary. So things like that, there has to be proof, given some kind of affirmation, maybe a verification on we collect the last four of Social Security numbers. We could do a verify on that. They could provide that so we know it's them when they do it. But there's no reason that we have to make them mail in a physical application. We could have it done online and then mail them the ballot. And then they have to mail the ballot back. A lot of people, when I talk to young people, say, well, why can't I vote on my phone? You know, I bank on my phone. I do everything else on my phone. Well, I'm not a proponent of online voting, and I'm pretty progressive on just about anything else. But one of the reasons, one of the big hurdles to online voting is anonymity, because we protect the anonymity of your vote. Nobody ever knows how a person votes. We know if you voted, so if you lie to us on the phone and say you vote every year and we can see that, no. But we know if you voted, we know where you voted, we know where you live, but we don't know how you voted. And that's something that is a basic tenet of our democracy. Well, when you're doing banking online, every transaction is tied to you personally, exactly what you did, it tied to a bank record. If you did voting online to prevent fraud, you'd have to know how somebody voted. At least the technology hasn't been proven to exist, in my opinion yet, to protect anonymity yet. So online voting, maybe when my son is elections commissioner someday, he'll be able to do that. But I don't think it's any time in my time. But I may be wrong. Technology changes every year, so who knows? And we need to look at eliminating fusion voting. Well, what is fusion voting? Fusion voting is where it is unique to New York. So those of you who grew up in New York, you think this is commonplace. This only happens in three states, New York, Connecticut, and South Carolina, where a candidate's name will appear multiple times on a ballot. Here's a ballot here. You can't really see the names, but the same candidate will appear three or four times on a ballot. And so no matter where a voter votes on that ballot, we combine those votes, we fuse them at the end of the night, and that's their win total. Well, only three states do this, Connecticut, South Carolina, and New York. And what it does is it creates all kinds of confusion at the ballot box and all kinds of expense and wasteful spending. By the way, New York has 50% of the election law litigation throughout the entire country. And that's a lot because of fusion voting. Voters are confused. They don't know what ballot box to pick. Many times they pick all of them. And on absentee ballots, that can result, you know, it may result in them, and then they write in the name at the bottom as well, and that can result in the vote being thrown out. So this fusion voting confuses, I call it confusion voting, because it confuses voters as well. Now, a lot of the minor parties feel like if we got rid of it, they wouldn't exist. But these minor parties exist in other states as well. They would just have to either run their own candidates or they can endorse a major party candidate, but they just wouldn't appear on the ballot. And that's fine as well. But having the ballot be simplified will help, especially New York City last year got a lot of concern during their electoral process because of paper jams in the machines. Well, one of the reasons they had paper jams in the machines, they went to a four-page ballot because they had such a long ballot, and a lot of it is because of fusion voting. So they had front and back on two sides, on two pieces of paper is what a voter had to fill out. By the way, that's amazing. A voter has to do that. But they try to perforate it so the sheets wouldn't get separated and you know somebody would put only one sheet in and stuff like that. Well, the perforation caught in the machines, ballots got wet. It was very rainy day that day in New York. You know, people came in, their coats were wet, the ballots got wet. It caused a lot of problems. But what really caused the problem was fusion voting, because they wouldn't have had to have that long ballot if it wasn't for that. You would have the simple, just one person versus the next person. You can put on there who endorsed them if you want. Other fusion states allow symbols next to the candidates instead of taking up separate ballot lines. So that would eliminate a lot of cost in our system and a lot of confusion. But it all comes down to that, the dollar sign. Because elections are expensive, and a lot of these changes that are coming about are going to be at higher costs. So we have to have a real conversation about how we fund elections, not just in Onondaga County, but New York State as a whole. In New York State, the host counties are the ones that are responsible for funding the election 100%, despite New York State offices being on the ballot. And it's not equitable. Not every county has the resources that other counties have. Smaller counties have smaller staffs. Even bigger counties sometimes don't give the resources to their boards of elections, and the boards of elections, although can spend as much money as they need to fund an election, they don't really like it when we do that. So, you know, there's always a little tension, and we're always trying to be within our budget ranges that the counties give us as well. So New York State offices appear on the ballot, as well as federal and locality should be partially reimbursed for that. This is what happens in other states. Colorado, the Secretary of Colorado and I were on a panel about 4 years ago, and they were talking about how they enacted a system where they figured out how many positions were on a ballot that were either state propositions or state or federal props. So these are things that are the New York State government would be responsible for, and they reimburse the counties for that. Right now, $0 comes from New York State to Onondaga County to hold an election. And that's really too low. So we should have some kind of reimbursement. By the way, and I need to point this out because I point this out for two reasons. I have an incredible staff, and they're great. But we are the lowest staffed full-time employees per voter ratio in the state in Onondaga County. We have 14 full-time employees and 2 full-time commissioners. That averages to 1 full-time employee for every 17,000 voters in Onondaga County. The rest of the state averages 1 full-time employee for every 7,000 to 8,000 voters. So we're not just talking about small counties that need this help that is inequitable. We're one of the larger counties. We're also inequitable either because we're relying on county hosts to bring that money in. And that's one of the reasons why we were working 12-hour days, because we didn't have the staff to handle this. And my staff on both sides of the aisle are incredibly dedicated, and they work very hard. And I applaud them for their work, but this can't stand for much longer, because as more work is coming our way, all counties should have, there should be a ratio, there should be a funding coming from the state to make sure that you're not having this kind of inequitable representation. Electronic poll books will be a massive investment, and counties need state funding, and that's happening right now. The New York State budget is being discussed, and we're talking anywhere from $25 to $30 million statewide, and that's outside of New York City, to implement electronic poll books. So that's something that the state funding needs to happen. And we should look, you know, we can't just say, oh, well, the state should fund all of this. We can look to alternative ways to gain revenue as well. Other states have filing fees for running for office. Instead of petitions, instead of going out and getting 1,500 petitions, maybe you pay $1,500 and you get to bypass that. Believe me, I could use that money. I could put it to good use. But that doesn't mean you would eliminate the petitions. So somebody who doesn't want to pay that, who wants to go out there, a campaign that doesn't have that kind of money, could still go out and get petitions. But this is the kind of out-of-the-box thinking that I think, personally, I believe we need to start looking at, and so we can raise revenue and have the campaigns that are taking part in the process be part of funding the electoral process as well. So these are the kind of things that we should look at as we're going forward. So now I'd love to take any questions about anything that I talked about or anything election-wise at all.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for the wonderful information. I'm a Town of Lafayette resident. Thank you for not forgetting about us down south. Voting is probably one of the least technological things that I do. And I'm wondering if other states do online voting, and if so, if you could speak about that?
Not online. I don't know anywhere that does online voting. They do a lot of the other things, like online voter registration, early voting, electronic poll books, all of that they do, but not online. And nobody's as analog as we are last year. We're going to get better this year.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. A couple questions. One, by when and by what means would you recommend that voters who have moved check online to make sure that their voter registration that you know has moved to their new address. And also, will pre-registered 16, 17-year-olds, will they show up in FOIL requests for voter enrollment data? And final question, will same-day voter registration also apply to primaries?
Yeah. So first question is, you should always check your voter registration. You can easily check it at our website, ongov.net/election. We have a link to the New York State voter registration file, so you can check it throughout the state. If you mailed in a form, if you didn't do it by DMV, if you mailed it in, there's usually about a 1 week to 2 week lag from when you send it in, a little bit less by for DMV, because when we get a form, we still have to physically punch it in. It's not automatically given to us. And that's by design, because we want everything checked, and we don't want any other system to have access to our registration files. So when we talk about the hacking of elections like we've seen, they can't hack our registration file because they have no access to it. The second thing was the 16, 17-year-olds. Will it be FOIled? Yes, they'll be part of the inactive voter file, and that will be easily FOILable. And the last thing, same-day registration, would have applied to primaries? I don't know. And that's because that's the enabling legislation part of that constitutional process. So all the constitutional amendment does now is allow it. Then the enabling legislation has to put up what the regulations are. Will it allow people to register to vote for the first time on a primary inside a party? I don't know. Now, that leads to another thing, which is switching of parties is a big thing in New York State. Especially since the last presidential primary, and that has not been changed. And I don't see a bill out there to be changing it yet either. So more than likely, it's not going to get changed anytime soon. I'm an advocate to changing it down to 90 days, mainly because I want it 90 days before the election, because I don't want the petition period to be happening where people can change their party during the petition period for an election. There is no movement on there for a bill to change that. So still now, if you want to vote in a primary in 2020, go change your registration now, because you have to be in that party by October of 2019 to vote in any primary in October of 2020. And if you want to vote in a primary this year and you haven't changed your registration, you're out of luck. So because we have that long sequester.
Good morning. One of my concerns about the location of the sites for early voting is who's going to make the decision and what type of feedback are you getting from the people who live in the areas. I've been in Florida when they've had the early voting, so I've spent a lot of time talking to people standing in line, because God forbid who wants to be in the sun all day. And it's really interesting, and one of the biggest thing I hear is people saying they wish they could vote on a Sunday.
Well, and in New York, you will be able to. The decisions are made by the commissioners here, the bipartisan commissioners. So we have to come to agreement. That's a little different than in Florida, where they have partisan election commissioners. And by the way, that's one of the things that New York does well, is this bipartisan commissioners. And I don't just say that because that's my salary. I said that before I was a commissioner, because we have to agree. And we have to agree on things. So not one party can control anything. So both the Republican commissioner and the Democratic commissioner will have to decide where these sites are. And we're going to take into account whether, because we have the opposite problem in New York. We're not going to get a lot of sun in November, but we're going to get a lot of precipitation. So we're keeping in mind parking. We're keeping in mind big rooms to have this in. We're looking at the poll sites we already have, so that's part of it. But they have to be big enough to be able to handle 50,000 voters. Again, over 9 days, so it's not going to be that much. But also, they have to be open. So that's why we're looking at town halls. That's why we're looking at shopping malls that there's already traffic in, Southwest Community Center, things that are already located in neighborhoods that already house lots of people routinely that we can use. So, and public input, we're taking it daily. If you have some input, please let us know, because I'd love to hear it.
Good morning. This is worth the effort to get here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Two questions. First one in regard to village elections. I understand that they are the reason they're held in March is because their fiscal years are different than the towns in the county. But was there any consideration to include them in this consolidation, which I'm assuming would then require a constitutional amendment? Second question is, I've always heard for several years that you have trouble getting poll workers. If that is the case, are you concerned about filling the positions for these six sites? Are you going to use non-county workers? And will there be more or less? And are you concerned about your ability to attract more people, or enough people, I should say?
Well, I'll touch the village elections first. By the way, that thing about the budget, I'm going to get in trouble with the villages now. I'm probably going to get arrested every time I go through it, but that's not true. It's simply not true. In fact, we had three villages move to November elections last year. And that has been something that I and my Republican commissioner and counterpart before her have pushed throughout my time as election commissioners. And I'm just going to be frank. I think a lot of the villages, and they have said it in the press, so I'm just going to say it. A lot of the villages like these March elections because they're lower turnout. And not only lower turnout, it's harder to find out how you get on the ballot to compete. These are uncontested elections. And if they moved to November elections, their cost for that election would be zero. They are choosing to spend more money now to have elections in March and June. And there's a reason why they're choosing that. Now, Solvay, East Syracuse, Camillus, and Tully all have elections in November. Camillus has had it in November for a long time. The last three moved it 2 years ago. They saw their increase in voter turnout and participation in their village election go up, in some cases, 120%. That's how few people actually vote in these village elections in March. And I've heard, well, you know, the people who vote in March really care about village elections. Well, they're still village taxpayers that vote in November. These are still your residents. Making it easier for them, I think, is more important. But I don't live in a village, and I'm probably going to be barred from living in a village after this. On the recruitment of inspectors, absolutely. I'm worried about the technological change. Anytime we have a technological change, when we moved from the old lever machines, and by the way, they're never coming back, don't ask, to the new ones, we lost some inspectors then. However, I think this will be less of a sea change because the poll books are very intuitive. I give credit to our seniors that are working these. You guys can work tablets. You know, we're going to lose some, but other states do this. And are we saying that New York seniors are not as good as other seniors? No, I know we can do this, and I know that we can train them well, and we have these states to learn from. We don't use county employees now because they work on election day. City employees work on election day. That's why I'm kind of hoping that the governor's wish for an election day holiday happens, because I would love those workers to be off on election day to be inspectors. So, I hope that will help with that as well.
All right, please join me in thanking Dustin for coming in.